Welcome, welcome, traveller, to The Rest Is Noise. A podcast where each week we search for the perfect music to embody a concept, person, people, place, or thing. Now, you know when you just celebrated the new year, you wake at dusk, like you always do, and see the sun, salmon pink, and six other planets in the sky. In a few days, it'll be new year again, so the pressure's on to clear out the garage and book that appointment at the dentist. Not to worry though, every day here lasts forever. Shame then that you'll only live for another 15 minutes, thanks to overexposure from UV and gamma radiation. Such is life on TRAPPIST-1F, one of seven exoplanets that scientists have recently discovered orbiting an ultra-cool dwarf star in the Aquarius constellation 39 light-years from Earth. To celebrate this discovery, our topic this week is Solar System. My guests, to send all our Mercury soaring, it's Richard. He's got it. Yeah, baby, he's got it. Our very own Venus, Nathan, and a very special guest this week, singer-songwriter John Joseph Brill. Welcome, John. We're thrilled to have you here.
Hello.
Now, is anyone else as excited as I am that we could find forms of life elsewhere in the universe as soon as 10 years from now?
If we're any benchmark at the moment, then they'll probably be better. So, yeah, I'm down with it.
It's very likely they're just going to be basically algae.
Well, then they're probably doing a lot better than we are as a planet right now.
Or just little frozen microbes.
In today's climate, 10 years seems like a long, long way away, doesn't it?
We may not make it there.
Yeah. The Rock will be president. Here's hoping.
Does anyone know much about TRAPPIST-1?
Other than that it sounds like a Belgian beer.
It's also it's the one planet that's not allowed to speak.
We're going to start off this week with my choice. It's Black Sabbath, Planet Caravan. Planet Caravan is a song about a journey through our own solar system. There are lyrics about the Earth, a purple blaze of sapphire haze in orbit always, the Moon, and Mars. We pass on by the crimson eye of great god Mars. But it seems to come from a parallel universe altogether, one in which Ozzy Osbourne is a romantic poet and Black Sabbath are an acid folk band. And news of TRAPPIST-1 must be music to Ozzy's ears. Fuel tariffs for his planet caravan are likely to be massively reduced by the relatively short distance between the seven planets in the TRAPPIST-1 solar system. They would all fit inside the distance between the Sun and Mercury in our own solar system.
The veritable M25 of solar journeys.
Planet Caravan is a caravan between planets. So Ozzy Osbourne's imagining himself in space. Geezer Butler said, so it was just about floating through the universe with your loved one. Instead of, let's go down the pub and have some chips or whatever.
Is that a quote?
Wow.
Just taking a spaceship out into the stars and having the ultimate romantic weekend.
What, instead of having some chips?
Yeah, from Birmingham.
Still in a caravan as well.
But honestly, when I heard it, I thought Planet Caravan. I got a solar system thing from it because I thought of like a caravan of planets, like a caravan of camels. So they're all strung together in a row.
Well, that's what it's close. It actually caravan is in a kind of oceanic sense, like the caravan, which is a ship between.
I still feel we've all given it more thought than Black Sabbath clearly did down the pub.
They don't mean a caravan like on a caravan park.
That's what I thought.
You say that now. I mean,
no, they.
Although, so my theory of that song is that that's not Black Sabbath at all. No. I think they probably went down the pub and somebody else snuck in and recorded that song because it both on that record and in their whole oeuvre, that song makes no sense.
It's so unusual. It was almost as if this was the hit from this record, rather than Paranoid, for example, you know, it could have led to them being an acid folk, like a jazz band, all the way through the 1780s. I mean, how weird would that have been?
I'd love to hear a record where they went that way. It just, it always jars with me when, like, Iron Man comes in the minute that finishes. And it completely...
That kind of makes sense to me in terms of sequencing, though.
I think so, yeah.
Like, cool, oh, of that, like, you've gone through the universe and you get home and then a massive fuck-off robot's turned up.
The first four tracks on Paranoid, by the way, are War Pigs, Paranoid, then this, then Iron Man. I would argue that's the greatest start to any album.
It's also the four best Black Sabbath songs in a row, in order, probably. So that was good of them. To get it over and done with once and then go for some chips.
I sort of love it until the guitar outro, which, like, because I really like the bass part. The bass groove the whole way through is awesome and really doesn't sound like Black Sabbath. And makes it clear that Geezer Butler could really play bass as well, if it was actually him in the studio recording it and not down the pub. But that groove is fantastic, but I kind of don't get the point in the guitar part that goes over the top. It doesn't... It almost takes me out of the hypnotic sort of nature of the song that makes me feel like I am sort of cruising through the solar system.
Well, he says... Tommy Iommi said that it was massively influenced by Django Reinhardt's jazz guitar. I mean, how often can you say that about a Black Sabbath record?
Probably once.
Yeah.
Just then.
But forget for a minute this is Black Sabbath. This is... a beautiful record.
It is actually completely in of itself. It's a very cool piece of music.
The recording's bizarre. I really like what they've done to Ozzy Osbourne's voice in it. He speaks through something called a Leslie speaker, which Ozzy Osbourne told Mojo in 2010. Apparently, Roger Bain used an oscillator on it called a Leslie speaker, whatever that is. It looks like a fridge with a knob on.
I've used one in the studio.
A Leslie speaker
on guitars. Because effectively, we wanted to make guitars... This is in a band I was in years ago. We wanted to make the guitars sound like helicopters. And what a Leslie is effectively, it's a speaker, but the actual speaker part inside, like, it's a cabinet, and the speaker spins around. So you get the full frontal noise into the microphone, and then you end up with the back of it. So it creates this kind of whirring effect.
Yeah, you do get that. You can hear that in his voice.
And so they mainly used for guitars.
What was it like making Be Here Now?
But there's one of my favourite artists is Jason Molina, Songs Ohio, and there's a record of his called the Magnolia Electric Company, on which I'm convinced there's a section of that where they put synth choir through a Leslie speaker. So a friend of mine and I tried to do it, and it sounded rubbish, but it sounds great on that record.
Right, we're going to move on. Richard, what have you chosen this week?
I have chosen Supergalactic Lover by Cool Keith.
I was your boyfriend, girl, Lieutenant Lover, Flight Commander. Member of the Air Force, remember when I bought you a Porsche? Diamond rings with roses, I put pearls in your noses. Put you in heels, paid your school loans and tons of bills. I ripped 8,000 through a stack up in the fireplace. You couldn't believe it, your mom was there with a sad face. I had you accounts, 3 million with big amounts. You wrecked your Impala, I seen you at the beauty parlor. Gave you a check, engagement ring, $4 million. Your friends were surprised.
That was Rap Maverick, Cool Keith. If you know Cool Keith at all, you might have come across him when he was part of Hip Hop Foursome, the Ultramagnetic MCs. And if you never did, you might know the immortal line, "Change my pitch up, smack my bitch up," which was sampled by The Prodigy. As a solo performer, after he left, or Ultramagnetic MCs kind of dissolved, he has very much orbited his own pretty out there solar system. And he's managed to influence everyone from Eminem to Chino Marino from the Deftones. This particular song, Supergalactic Lover, is from his fourth solo LP. He's got more pseudonyms than anyone can keep count of. The internet seemed to be in dispute. It was anywhere between 16 and 48 different performing names. For this particular album, his fourth in 1999, he settled on Black Elvis. And the album was called Black Elvis / Lost in Space. And it was a two-part concept record, essentially, where he donned this mad black plastic quiff wig and went on this interstellar trip of space, sex, and admirably creative self-aggrandizing. The subject matter pretty much is an exploration of space and aliens and his obsession with sex, which permeates the rest of his career. He claims to have invented porno core. I thought I'd close my argument with a YouTube comment, which simply says, in mostly capital letters, "Stab yourself with a jart if you think your style tops Cool Keith, keeping it goblet."
Two things. First, he may have 48 pseudonyms. That's amazing that he settled at Cool Keith, of all names.
His name is Keith.
And he's cool.
And he's pretty cool.
He is pretty cool. Second thing, maybe he's the one we need to send to Trappist-1. At the moment, the craft we have at the current day would take us 800,000 years to get to that solar system. However, Stephen Hawking and Mark Zuckerberg are backing a project called the Breakthrough Starshots Laser Sail-Propelled Nanocraft.
Snappy.
Which travels at...
It's a goblet name, that.
That travels at 20% of the speed of light and will get us there in 200 years. So if we've got the sex-obsessed Cool Keith on board, we're going to need three or four generations of Cool Keith.
There are worse people I'd like to populate a new planet than Cool Keith. He gave a little bit of a backstory to Black Elvis. Simply, he was somebody born in Memphis. He likes flashy cars and nice disco clubs.
What's the difference between intergalactic and supergalactic?
Well, I don't think somebody of Keith's racing mind and limitless vocabulary would settle for intergalactic. Although, as you might have noticed in the lyrics, he doesn't actually spend that much time with the intricacies of space. He's slightly more concerned with kind of bigging himself up in quite create ever more creative ways. My favourite bit being, "I ripped 8,000 through a stack up in the fireplace. You couldn't believe it. Your mum was there with a sad face." Which, on a really sort of charming lyrics website, was translated for the layman thusly: "Keith has so much money to spare that he threw $8,000 into a fireplace. The girl is understandably shocked, and her mother is saddened by this excessive display of wealth." So that kind of amused me. And if anyone else knows what colour monkey green is, then...
This is what I was going to ask. What is it? It's a monkey green...
Ragtop Seville. So right. Seville is a...
An orange.
It's a make of Cadillac.
Yes.
And a ragtop, from what I can work out, is a convertible.
Is that like a Surrey with a fringe on top?
What's that?
That's from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I think, isn't it? There's a song called Surrey with a Fringe on Top, and the Surrey is the car.
Oh.
And I didn't realise that because I'd never seen it, so I started apologising for things by saying "Sorry with a Fringe on Top" because I thought that was the expression.
It's got a lot to answer for, that movie.
Could Cool Keith pimp Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Probably, and he's probably attempted in his...
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang sounds quite hip-hop as it is.
It does, yeah.
I bet he's got a few fine four-fended friends as well.
I don't know, we could probably do without a child catcher in...
Is there a child catcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Yeah. It's the most terrifying 3 minutes put to film.
Yeah. The child catcher.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then...
Would that be R. Kelly?
We're sending the child catcher into space with Carl, with Cool Keith.
Carl Keith.
With Carl Keith as well. Just a bloke who lives in Basildon.
I must admit, this was his dogs.
Because Pub for Crisps.
It's about space, and it's from an album called Lost in Space, and I will take that argument and run with it.
Well, thank you, Richard. Nathan, we're on to you next. What's your choice this week?
My choice is Mount Erie in Moonlight.
No. a sudden there was a light. I saw my shadow on the ground. I thought a car was coming. I turned around and there was no car. It was me revealed in moonlight.
Mount Erie is primarily a vehicle of Washington State-based musician Phil Elverum, probably best known for his previous band The Microphones, whose The Glow Part 2 is probably regarded as a noughties indie rock classic. And whilst always firmly rooted in the American K Records indie rock sound, the sonics of Mount Erie vary quite widely, from the lo-fi metal of Black Wooden Opening Ceiling to the almost choral and extremely lo-fi production of the Singers EP. But whilst the musical styles may vary, there are a number of constant themes that run throughout Elverum's work. One of those is space, and in particular, the moon. Now, I did a count of the 20 or so studio albums and singles and EPs that Elverum has released. There are eight songs that are named directly after the moon, and there are many more that reference space. In this song, the moon pops up seemingly to illuminate a scene, to reveal the person for whom our protagonist is looking, a kind of lunar council or spirit guide. And this happens in some of his other songs too. I'm thinking of The Moon by The Microphones, in which the heavenly body reveals to a couple their place in the universe. But what the moon reveals during In Moonlight is a speaker's own shadow, which leaves the listener in a bind. Does our protagonist find himself or find nothing? Is the moon an epiphanic or obfuscating force? Perhaps the answer can be found in one of his other songs, which is called Two Moons. It's 1 minute and 14 seconds long. I'll read you the lyrics because there's about four lines, where he says, "There are two moons. The one that everyone knows is a reflection in a bucket wearing clothes. We see reflections. The second moon is actually the moon."
Amen.
I was confused by it.
Right.
I am confused now.
I loved it. And I actually like this. What's interesting is what you said about self-reflection makes it so much clearer to me. There's like when he's bathed in light and the moon comes out and this crazy horse-esque cacophony starts, especially when it goes off. Like those guitars, I wouldn't be surprised if the whole guitar sound for that record was modelled on Crazy Horse.
I remember him talking about this EP when it came out in about 2006, and he was talking about trying to experiment with metal. He was influenced by black metal was where his biggest influence.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting, because I thought it... the point I was going to make was the self-reflection thing. The moment that kicks in, it's almost like the horror of self-discovery when that thing kicks off. But it's interesting that you say he was experimenting with metal, because I did get that in the movement. Like, what the drums and the rhythm guitar are doing suggests that. But what that lead guitar doing is, like, straight out of Neil Young.
Right.
Like, words through the lines of hate and things like that. Like, it's that guitar part, Southern Man.
Yeah.
Those one-note guitar solos that say more than anything else could.
Yeah.
He does... The one-note guitar solos, he does frequently, even when he's not experimenting with a heavier sound, he does... He sort of picks out these very, very simple loops or hooks.
Mm.
And they often don't progress very far at all, and he manages to pin an entire song on those things.
See, for me, that's straight out of Neil.
Right.
That's a very, like, especially electric Neil, like, thing to do. What was also interesting about that for me was that the only bit that jarred with me is the ending, the very ending, where it goes off, and I go, you lost me. You had me, and then it sounds like... Same thing with those Neutral Milk Hotel records, where there's one song that's like a punk song, and you're like, oh, dude, I was so in that.
No, I love that. That's my favourite part of the song. Yeah, yeah, I really, really liked it. And this is perhaps because whenever I've tried to listen to other sort of more polished metal music, I find the production so shiny, so slippery, that that I can never get into it. And whereas the lo-fi essence of this... I find it really...
It's funny because I just would never call that metal.
Can you shed some more light on the obfuscation and the other word?
Epiphanic. So the element of the song where it all turns around is when he sees a light coming from behind him and he thought it was a car coming. He turns around and it wasn't. It was his shadow reflected in the moonlight, right? So he turned around with the hope that something might reveal itself. I mean, he repeatedly recounts the words, "I will find you, I will find you, I will find you." So this is a voyage of discovering someone, right? And he turns around in the hope that maybe something will be revealed. He will find something. In fact, what does he reveal? Nothing but his own shadow. So the obfuscating part there is that maybe he doesn't, maybe he finds nothing. You know, the moon apparently reveals something, but in the end reveals nothing. And
so he's talking about his own personality and his failings, or how
does well, it, well, I think this song and this EP seem to me to be talking about him finding out about his own failings and coming to terms with those. Because this is a man who's extremely anxious, he's repeating the same words again and again and again. I think in other songs, he looks to the moon to reveal something, and it does, and in this song, it doesn't.
If I were to hand you a blank check of argument cachet, I might suggest that this is maybe the mantra of the NASA scientists who, for years, have been perhaps looking for this new solar system. They might find it, they might not. I will find you, I will find you. And that was the hope they clung on to, and now they've found it.
And then Neil Young was there.
Well, so...
You can have that, by the way.
Thank you very much. Well, so when it goes wild at the end there, you can't really hear the words that he's saying, but he talks about it's only when he stops looking that he found the thing that he was looking for, which is lamely U2-esque, but...
no, he's still looking.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, he still hasn't found, is it?
Just
yeah,
turn around, mate, it's the moon.
And I thought you were going to bring this in as well about the discovery of TRAPPIST-1 and the planets there, because...
I was actually. Well, but you go.
Because they haven't seen the planets directly. They've only seen the shadow of the planets reflected on the star. They don't know if there's any moons to these planets as yet, but I love the moon as a metaphor, possibly in the same way that he's talking about his own personality and his own life, because the moon is... we can only see the moon because of another solar body. We the moon would be dark unless there was the sun there. We're only seeing the reflection of something else's light. Is that something he's talking about? Maybe a father figure or a friend or a partner.
It put me in mind of my stepdad growing up was a pretty unsensitive character in terms of what it was like to have young children around, and used to read horror stories to us when we were kids going to bed. And one of them was about a princess who goes out and dances with the prince she's promised to every night in the maze. But she's not allowed to look at him. And then the night of the full moon, she's allowed to look at him. And she disappears, and the prince turns up and and finds her shoe. And all that he sees in the ground, her footprint, a shoe print, and two hoof prints. And she's disappeared with the devil. But it's all...
I thought she was like a half horse, half woman.
Yes, yes.
The centaur bride.
Yeah, just like one Air Max and a hoof.
Why did he think it was good to tell you stories like that?
Well, he is lacking as a person. No, he's very a very, very kind of straightforward character with not much critical thought.
He's going onto the spaceship with
Cool Keith.
Carl Keith, yeah.
Hello, spaceship. And if you'd like to be on the spaceship, please tweet us at Trin Podcast.
John.
Hi.
What have you chosen this week?
I have chosen Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground by Blind Willie Johnson. Scientists from all over the world descended on Spain. In Spain, there was a certain point where you could see a total eclipse of the sun. At exactly the same moment, in Texas, you were also able to see a partial eclipse of the sun. And it was then, it's rumoured, that an 8-year-old Willie Johnson was staring at the sky and stared for too long and was blinded. That is one of two anecdotes as to his blindness, the other being that he was blinded with lye that his stepmother threw in his eyes after she was accused of adultery by his father. Willie Johnson was born in 1897. In 1977, Carl Sagan was asked to, with a team of researchers, curate a golden disc of music to effectively music and sounds from Earth that were the Voyager probes to encounter alien life, would be the, you know, their first example of what humans were like and what life was like on Earth, and chose Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground by Willie Johnson. The song's kind of fascinating to me because rather than having vocal parts, it has what a music historian named Mark Humphrey described as an impressionistic rendition of lining out, which was a way of singing in African-American churches where all the voices would follow the basic vocal melody with slight changes. You'll notice that most of the time in the song, he's following his own guitar part in the way he's singing. But the song itself takes its title from a hymn called Gethsemane by Thomas Halls, which was particularly popular in African-American churches in the late 1800s and early 1900s. There's something incredibly beautiful about this piece of music to me. I find it terribly haunting. Bearing in mind that Willie Johnson was homeless for much of his life, and Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground suggests to me a man sleeping in the street. He died in the burned down ruins of his own house after multiple sicknesses. They wouldn't, like his wife reported that they wouldn't see him in hospitals because he was black. He led an incredibly tragic life, blinded as a young man, died destitute, but made these beautiful recordings in the late 20s. But the argument I would posit for this being the most appropriate song to choose for the solar system is that Blind Willie Johnson was a man who was blinded too young to ever fully appreciate the stars. But there's some real beauty in the fact that his voice is the first one the stars will ever hear after the Voyager probe left the termination shock in 2003 and went out into the universe.
Yeah, our three songs might be about space. This is the only song that is in space. And do you know much about Voyager from 1977? Its task was to see the outer solar system.
Yeah.
So to see Saturn, Uranus, Neptune and Pluto. Mm-hmm. And it achieved that.
Well, didn't one of them end up avoiding Pluto because they wanted to look at one of the moons of Jupiter for longer?
I don't think they have any control over it. I think it just goes, and what you get is what you get.
I thought they had designed
courses. Well, there's Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. Mm. I think Voyager 2 split and went to look at the moons around Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And Voyager 1, I forget which one, I'm afraid, but one went into Jupiter and has been destroyed.
Mm.
One carried on past, and it completed its mission. And they assumed that at the edge of the solar system, the thing would, you know, they knew it was going to be 20, 30 years later. And it would die. It's still going.
It's thermodynamic energy, isn't it, that's powering it? And they think now it might go for another 20 years or something.
It's going to keep going. So they're using machines from 1977. So this is still a machine at NASA which is spewing out reams of paper with those holes in the side with data transmitting. But the problem is there is nothing to report. There are no stars. It will never reach another star. It will never reach another solar system. The only thing that could ever happen to it is it comes near to an asteroid. And it hasn't so far. It's complete blanket silence outside of our solar system.
But you couldn't not check it.
Oh, yeah. as long as it continues to work. It's still...
It's also awesome that on the golden disc, there's a stylus attached to it with instructions on how to play the record that are visual. So there's like a visual description of how to put the record on and listen to it were you to encounter it.
That's
that are supposed to be completely alien-proof, basically, like anyone could understand them.
And weren't... Am I right in saying that some of the other things on the record were like field recordings of wind and
yeah. sort of
bees,
yeah, just and kind of birds like earth and things. Sounds.
In a more recent space probe, I think there was a competition, and bands had to enter a 20 or 30 second piece of music, and the band who won that competition, I think about 10 years ago, was Blur.
Yes, Blur. It's on. Was it? Was it on the Mars rover? That Blur. I could be. Yeah, but so a little 20 second Blur song existed on a rocky outcrop of space somewhere. But it's not that, is it? I mean, that's a pretty powerful piece of music. Not least its church roots. It has that sort of chain gang roots, and you know, the longevity of that song, not least in space, but here on Earth as well, is incredible. You know, that's a really remarkable piece of music.
That quite reflects what Carl Sagan said about it as well, when he chose it, which was, Johnson's song concerns a situation he faced many times, nightfall with no place to sleep. Since humans appeared on Earth, the shroud of night has yet to fall without touching a man or woman in the same plight.
Almost as well. I remember when I first saw the title of this song, you know, you could easily say that dark was the night, cold was the ground, might be your initial diary entry first words if you're the one to step onto this Trappist One, because that's probably the two most obvious and compelling things you'd be feeling and looking at.
The radiation would also be quite...
Oh, you'd be then dead.
Yeah, Cool Keith would be getting on your nerves.
So this song was put on Voyager 1 and 2?
Both.
Both?
The golden disc went on both Voyager missions.
And yeah, Martin, you were saying that the Voyager has now gone beyond Pluto.
It's mm-hmm. left our solar system.
It's left our solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's the first thing, the first human-built thing to have left the solar system.
Right, and what's the subject of this podcast?
The solar system.
Yeah, I'm just putting it out there. I'm just putting it out there.
Oh, I say. Well, I mean, the purpose of the Voyager mission was to explore the solar system.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm just trying to find a reason why you can't win. because at the moment, you've absolutely cleaned up, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
There's only one reason.
Why. Yeah. You also, yeah, okay, well, it was a West Wing episode, and you're wearing a West Wing t-shirt, you can't see this.
It wasn't a West Wing episode. It is mentioned on a West Wing episode, and is also the title of a West Wing episode.
Is that where you got the idea from?
I actually did, yeah.
That's just completely fallen over, your entire argument.
Oh, God.
And by the way, he's the only one here wearing a t-shirt, the rest of us are topless.
Yes. For now.
Shall we go to find out who's won this week? First up is me. I'm gonna have to choose Blind Willie Johnson. I think it's one of the most timeless pieces of music I've ever heard, considering it was recorded in 1927. Richard,
I'm gonna have to agree. As much as I love listening to Cool Keith, it seems frivolous in comparison to such a powerful solar system busting piece of 1920s blues.
Yeah, I agree. Blind Willie Johnson is my choice also.
I actually think I was going to choose yours.
Well, you still can.
No, I'm not going to now because you've all chosen me, so it's fine if I vote for myself. Now it's not a tiebreaker. I don't seem so arrogant like choosing my own, because I did win. But
yeah. Fairly convincing.
What if I'd have chosen my song?
Then I would have chosen your song to be contrarian and see what happens if a tiebreak happens, because we've never seen it.
Can we do something like that?
What does happen in case of a tiebreak?
We find a friend.
You phone a friend?
Yeah.
Is it Cool Keith?
Yeah.
Or is it?
It's Carl Keith.
It's Carl Keith. It is. All right, mate.
It's an 0208 number.
Whoever's got somebody called Carl or Keith in their phone.
So that's it for this week's episode of The Rest is Noise, where we've decided that the song that should soundtrack the solar system forever is Blind Willie Johnson with Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground. Join us next week when, following his Oscars blooper on Sunday night, our topic will be Warren Beatty. If you think you know a song that best embodies the Academy Award-winning actor and director, get in touch. Let us know on Twitter at Trin Podcast or find us on Facebook. Previous episodes of The Rest is Noise can be found on SoundCloud. Make some noise, everyone.
Space. Space.